This is the Golf Life Faith podcast brought to you by College Golf Fellowship. I'm Toby Ragland, one of your hosts. Another host is Jace Barber, and we are CGF staff members full-time. We love serving the world of college golf, and this podcast is going to be conversations with our PGA Tour partners, with CGF and other partners in the world of golf, and we hope you learn a lot. We certainly will along the way. Hope you join us for the journey and learn all areas golf, life, and faith.
Our guest today is Matt Van Zandt. We've enjoyed doing some CGF staff highlights on this podcast, and today we're going to interview Matt Van Zandt, who was on staff for a long time and then rolled off a few years ago. And so we'll get, you know, connected with Matt, what he's up to now, then also talk about some stories back from his college days and time with CGF as well. But Matt, we're excited to have you on today. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks, guys. Glad to be on.
And just full transparency for everybody, this is round two. We did it. We worked our way all the way through, did a great pod, and had a lot of technical difficulties. And so Matt was gracious enough to come back, and we're doing round two. So it's just going to be fantastic this go around. Right, Toby?
Absolutely. And the first go around was probably one of the best. I mean, now that we don't have it, we'll say it was the best one we've ever done.
Ever. That's what you ever done. It would have sent your podcast into a new echelon, guys.
Like Matt Van Zandt is the new Scotty Scheffler for our pod. You know, Scotty came on the Bible.
I'm sure it would have been like me and him parallel, you know.
Exactly.
All right, Matt, well, give us a picture of what life looks like for you now with your family, where you live, and what your current work position is.
Yeah, so my wife is named Kelly, and we have three girls. We have a four-year-old named Annie. We have a two-year-old named Emmy, and then we have a four-month-old named Winnie. So we've made it difficult in discipline situations to figure out which name to grab. But we live here in Houston, Texas, and I grew up here, went to A&M. And so I've always kind of been around Houston. A&M is about 90 miles from here. So not too far, but I work for a multifamily office called Turtle Creek Wealth Advisors. I left College Golf Fellowship in August of 2021 and went into the financial investment world, and I actually joined this group December 1st. So it's been a good thing, been fun. I enjoy what I do, and yeah, excited to get to talk about it a little bit.
Now with this current role, you're still playing some golf. How's that been going?
You know, I was actually telling somebody that every year is like the same like flow, and that is basically I don't play for the winter like at all. Pretty much like November to February, it's like, I mean, I may play one or two rounds maybe, and then it's like it's a little warmer, everybody's starting out playing golf, I get more charity golf invites and things like that, I have a qualifier here and there, and so every year I'm always like, I don't know, man, I just feel like this is gonna be the year that I just don't have it anymore, like I just don't show up. And so anyway, played US Open qualifying the other day, didn't make it, but I didn't play terrible, you know, and so anyway, I don't know. I'm playing some. I tend to play three categories of golf. I either play personal competitive stuff, which is very few and far between these days, charity golf tournaments, or I play invited golf for business stuff. That's it.
So that charity like golf is your main preparation, huh?
Yeah, I'm a self-proclaimed number one on the career money list in Pro Shop Credit Earned. I'm self-proclaimed, but I'm pretty sure I take the cake in that. Every year I try to get my wardrobe filled out with Pro Shop credits. So,
and yeah, I think Toby and Travis Wolf could, you know, at least put an argument in that, you know.
All right. Well, hey, I told you it was self-proclaimed. I don't have any data to back it up, but
yeah, we've had multiple summers where Lindsay's wish we could pay for groceries with Pro Shop credit.
No kidding. I mean, I'm always like, do they have the underwear I like and the socks I like here? I mean, this is perfect. Because I don't need another golf shirt.
So speaking about golf and, you know, just all of that, let's take it back to college, because you were a phenomenal college golfer and played for a very good team. And we'll, you know, talk about that a little bit. And then we'll transition to talk a little bit about mid-AM golf, because we got to, you know, bring it back to present and some fun stories from last year. But just talk about playing college golf and honestly what it meant to you, how it impacted you, how CGF kind of played into that maybe a little bit. But just, yeah, just talk a little bit about your college golf experience.
Yeah, so I think, well, my faith story kind of fits into this a little bit. So I became a Christian through Young Life, in between my freshman and sophomore year in high school, and continued to be involved with Young Life. But I had actually played in the Houston City Amateur and was told by a guy named Seth Thornton, which I don't know if you guys know Seth, but he played golf at North Texas. He's a pastor here in Houston. And he told me about College Golf Fellowship. And so I was aware of College Golf Fellowship before I even went into college. And so I was a very insecure high school kid. I was desperate to play on a well-represented or well-respected, probably a better way of putting it, golf team. And, you know, I was kind of a good recruit for the middle major schools that, you know what I'm talking about. But like the bigger schools, I was kind of a beggar, to be honest. And so I got the opportunity to go to A&M and Arkansas, but I was really tempted to go to Arkansas because they were putting a scholarship in front of me. And I didn't really want to go to Arkansas, but that sounded like they made me more valuable in their eyes. So I was very tempted by that. But anyways, thankfully I chose to go to A&M because I really had a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I would say the first statement you said is questionable. The second one is definitely true. I did play on a very good golf team. We had very good, I had very good teammates. I would say I was an average college golfer. But you know, then again, good is relative. So, I don't know. I don't really know how I did. I had an average golf career in college, but yeah, man, we had a great team. A lot of guys have come out and played on the PGA Tour and Korn Ferry Tour, for quite a long time. And, yeah, it was a wonderful, we had a really close golf team, which was super fun. And, I got real involved with CGF while I was in college. But what you're probably alluding to, Jace, is we did have the fortune of getting to win the national championship my last year, which is just an amazing way to go out. And that was for sure thanks to my good teammates, because I don't know what I finished that tournament, but I'm pretty sure there were three digits in that. In that number, so I'm pretty sure I finished like 128th or something in that event. So I wasn't on the podium. Let's put it that way.
Hey, well, I think, you know,
something you said, Matt, talking about you guys were a close team, and if you look at each team that wins a national, like if you're a college golfer listening, if you look at each team that wins a national championship every year. Like a common denominator, yeah, they're all great golfers. Like you have to play good golf, but they're all close teams. Like when I look at Florida last year, I was very close to them, and they were like brothers. Like it was a brother, and they rallied around each other, and they won the Natty. Same with you guys, and same for every single team. And a lot of guys just don't view it that way. It's like, oh, it's still an individual sport, whatever. And it's like, no, when you are like brothers, you're willing to think about each other and play for each other and encourage each other. It does have a huge impact. So I'm glad you even said that a little bit, because guys that are listening, you can take that, bring it to your team, and you can create something special just by being a really close group of guys.
I am amazed at how much just the unity and enjoyment of the team environment helps you spur one another on to be better. And so that was my experience, and I'm really thankful for it.
Yeah, staying on that topic of the 2009 National Championship, that was also my last college event. And you and I share that success story of both finishing the top 150 of the National Championship stroke play. One thing that I think would be really cool for you to share is that was the first year that the National Championship went to match play. So what were some of the things from the competition side that stood out to how that played out to where you guys ended up on the podium?
Yeah, so I mean, we were, I want to say, I mean, this is probably an approximation, but I think we were like the 14th ranked team in the country going into nationals. So, I mean, I would say we were a good team. That's a, I think that's good, but I mean, we weren't, Oklahoma State was so far in a way better than everybody else that year. And the second best team was Georgia, who was unbelievable, but they were still so far away from how good Oklahoma State was. And that was proven in the stroke play portion when I think, Toby, I think Oklahoma State won by like 14 or 13 was, or something that week. Maybe even 15. I don't know, but it was a lot. It Which was a large amount and it wasn't even close. But what was interesting. That's right. And so, you know, and I've been encouraged in this by some people have been close to me over the years because I'm not as much anymore, but I just used to be pretty embarrassed by my performance at the national championship because it's like now it has all this microscope on it and you like see all these things in on our in the clubhouse around A&M and it's like, oh, Bronson Burgoon finishes, you know, whatever, eighth and thirteenth and here's Matt Van Zandt, 128th or something like that. And you're like, oh, that's pretty humbling. But you know, over the years I've been encouraged by some people. But one of the things that was really fun about it, I mean it helped, was we finished tied for seventh. And so top eight made it. So we were obviously up for grabs on the seventh to eighth spot. Well, the eighth spot would have played Oklahoma State, the best team in the country by far. The seventh spot was going to play Arizona State, who was a good, solid team, but they were not even close to Oklahoma State. Well, I tied, the way they did the tiebreaker was I tied Adam Mitchell, who played on Georgia's team. We played tied with Georgia. And Adam, I mean, Adam Mitchell was unbelievable. The fact that he was their fifth man is a joke because he was a Walker Cupper and he was their fifth guy. But Adam shot the same thing as me over 3 days. And no, I'm sorry. I beat Adam Mitchell by one. So that made the fifth man be the tiebreaker. And so therefore, we got the seventh seed and they got the eighth seed, which meant we didn't play Oklahoma State first round. And so that ended up setting up one of the most epic matches of all time of Oklahoma State versus Georgia, because it ended up coming down to their both number one guys, Ricky Fowler versus Brian Harmon. And Brian Harmon was Ricky Fowler was two up with three to go. And Brian Harmon birdied 16 and 17 to get it back to even. And then on 18, Brian Harmon hit it in there about 15 feet and Ricky Fowler hit it in there about 8 feet. And Brian Harmon made his putt and Ricky Fowler missed. And so Georgia won and knocked off Oklahoma State in the first round, which was just huge. I mean, now it was like wide open for whoever was going to, who could win this thing. And so, and then what ended up happening right after that was Georgia then turned around and played, I believe Arkansas. And I don't know if they were tired or what, after the emotional high of that first match, ended up losing that match. And so now you had the two best teams in the country gone. And we played Arizona State. I have my match against Jesper Kennegaard. Do you remember that guy? He was unbelievable. He teed it up with a pencil. He was so good. But he was great. That was a pretty good match for me to tie him. And then we won that match, and then 3-1-1. And then we went to play Michigan, which was, I mean, the venue was Inverness, so Toledo, Ohio. Michigan's not very far from there, so that was like a home match for them. I mean, they must have had a couple hundred people who came out that were just watching Michigan. So it was definitely, we were definitely not getting cheers for our good shots. But anyway, so my match ended up coming down the last hole and was able to win on the last hole and win that match, and that sent us into the finals, which was so unbelievable. It's such a great memory, but also just I still can remember how much in knots my stomach was, and there had to have been 1,000 people around that green watching, and it was really fun. Get to come down, you know. Thankfully, the guy kind of made a mess the last hole, so I didn't have to do anything that spectacular. But I did hit it on the green, and I probably was going to make par. I didn't have to putt it. I was also thankful for that. But it was a real fun memory, and then that obviously sent us into the finals, and now it's kind of, you know, all all up for whatever, who is mano a mano. And the match versus Arkansas in the finals was kind of crazy. So I went off, Conrad Schindler went off first, and he lost his match 3-1. I went off second. I think I lost my match 3-1 as well. And then our third guy went on out, and he won his match 6-4 or 5-3. And then our second guy went out, our fourth match went out, and he won his 7-5. And so we were all done, like when Bronson was on 14 green. So like we run back, we're all done early, and Bronson is 4 up with 5 to play. And so we walk up to the green and he loses 14, 15, 16, and 17. And I remember like walking off of, and we're now the match is even. And I remember walking off of 17 and just thinking like, man, to be honest, I don't even care if we win the national championship. Like, I just want to be here for bronze. I'm like, who knows, who cares? This isn't the most important thing in life. Yeah, right. And so we get up in an 18T and Andrew Landry, he was playing Andrew Landry, PGA Tour winner. Yeah. And he stripes it right down the middle like Andrew Landry always does. And then Bronson gets up and blows it dead right. And we're like, oh my God, here we go. Like, so Andrew Landry, though, he doesn't hit very far. And Bronson hits it a pretty good ways. And so he hits it in the green. He hits a shot up there and it floats up in the air and comes up about 40 feet short. And Bronson gets over there and he doesn't have that far. It's only about 130 yards or so. But he's in the, you know, thick rough, but he hits a shot and I was up actually by the green and there's some bad replays of the video because it was Golfstat was live streaming it back then and it was a crane operator like way up in the air, so it was very bad. But they do have some video of it and I'm like right by it, and I'm like watching the ball in the air and I can just like see that it's going to be perfect. And you can just kind of like, you know how it is as a golfer, you can kind of project those things. And so like the ball's like not even landed on the green yet. And I'm screaming in the video. Yeah. Oh, and so anyway, it lands and then there's this big old hill and it takes this hill right down the hole. And I mean, it had to have been maybe 1 or 2 inches away. I mean, it was amazing. And so, you know, we're all going bananas, and then Andrew Landry gets up, misses his putt, and holy smokes, we just won the national championship. So it was an incredibly like high and low set of emotions, but what a great memory. And you know, I tell people now, I mean, I'm 38 years old now, which is crazy. I graduated from A&M. I graduated 15 years ago, and I don't go. There's no way I go a week without being introduced by somebody as, we won the national championship at A&M. So I keep joking with people, saying like, am I going to be like 85 years old in a wheelchair? And they're going to be like, oh, back in 2009, you know, this guy won the national championship. It's unbelievable memory and it's super fun. And it's the best part is just the friends you're with. That's the best part of all of it. And yeah, it's just super fun to be part of it.
Hey, but share, we can't just pass over your incredible stat that you
statistic. Oh yeah. Thank you. So I actually didn't realize this until many years after college, but I think it was at a CGF retreat where I was telling about the national championship. They were trying to have me tell my story. And I realized that I have to be the only college golfer who hit my first and last college golf shot in the water, because my first one, I started in a shotgun. It was like number 11 or 12 at Duke. It was my first college golf tournament. It was like 165 yards. It was cold. And I just laid sod over a 7-iron and it bounced into the water, which was really, really nice way to start my career. And then my last one was in match play and I was 2 down, 3 to go. On 17, I hit it in my drive into the fairway bunker and it's right up against the lip. And then the guy's right in the middle of the fairway. He hits it on the green. And I like try to hit this miracle shot way up over, nicks the lip, and there had to have been couldn't have been 4 feet wide creek about 40 yards in front of the green, and my ball just lands right in the middle of that creek, and I just walked over and gave him the hole, and that was the end of my college career. So I'm pretty sure that stat will stay good for a long time.
So good. Other thing is, nobody remembered that Bronson lost 14, 15, 16, and 17
No, until you get that.
You know,
I don't ever get that. And so, you know, I'm very, very thankful for that. And I know Bronson is too.
Opening up old wounds. So Matt, you mentioned, you know, in between that time of you graduating and now being 38 years old, you spent a lot of time working for College Golf Fellowship. What did it look like when you first came on staff with CGF?
Yeah, so I was working in the audit world for PricewaterhouseCoopers. I'd done that for a couple of years, and Brad Payne, who I had gotten really close with in college. I was actually up in Dallas, and you know, it had been a desire of mine to work for College Golf Fellowship even right out of college, but it wasn't really an option at that time. And so I just kind of moved on with my life, and I stayed involved. I was doing some volunteering with College Golf Fellowship, and I was up in Dallas, and Brad just kind of, you know, we're at an ice cream shop or something, and Brad was like, "Hey, you ever thought about coming on staff at the College Golf Fellowship?" And in my head, I'm like, "Man, I've been waiting for this conversation for like 5 years, right?" he talked. It was very normal. I mean, it was so integrated already with the ministry and knew everybody that it just felt right. But it was funny how I went home, started thinking about it. You know, at this point, I was all caught up in the conversations about money and retirement, and oh man, this guy's getting paid this. And I was just very caught up in a lot of that. And my initial reaction was, you know, I just don't know if I want to do that anymore. And even though I had been very excited about this conversation, and I remember talking to my best friend, Drew Allenspach, and he simply just said, like, his question to me was like, "Do you really think you could turn it down?" And I remember when he said that, it was like, "No, I can't turn this down." And so, so I came on in June of 2011. And it just some of the best times. I mean, what's crazy now looking back is when I came on, there were six of us, right? No, seven of us, because Gunnar was here still. So it was just a small ministry, and you know, we were excited at the possibility of growing, but it was very small and very just guys who loved each other really well. And Houston was a ripe territory. There was a lot of colleges here, and just hit the ground running, and I really just ran hard with College Golf Fellowship for probably 7 years without ever picking up my head to even consider doing something else. And first time I ever thought about doing something else was when I got married, and then, you know, but then that kind of faded, and then had a kid, and then came back up, and then that faded, and then when we got pregnant with our second one, I was like, okay, I got to really think about something. I got to think about what I'm doing here. And anyway, but it was a great honor to be with the ministry for 10 years.
So what you mentioned, you sounded like you had waited a long time to have that conversation with Brad. You're waiting for him to bring it up. What were some things about CGF that made you go, "That's the organization I want to work for"?
Yeah, I mean, Brad had become, I've always been a guy that, like, when I see something in somebody that I want in myself, I'm going to pester them. I want to get in front of them. I want to ask them questions. I want to learn from them. And I look back at things I did when I was like a little kid that I did that. So this is like something I feel like that is just innate in me. And I remember in college, I went to Ben Crane's retreat. It was my first one to ever go to. And Todd Wagner, I mean, he taught it and it was amazing. And I mean, I was just so, so convicted, but also just encouraged. And it really ignited in me a desire to learn about the Bible more. And I just started peppering Brad with questions. I'd just pick up the phone and call him and say, you know, "Hey, I don't understand this phrase in Romans," or something like that. And so just through that discipleship, through that relationship, Brad discipled me and got really plugged in at A&M and had great friends and had some good mentors there as well in College Station. And I just got really close to the ministry. The retreats are just so much fun. And they're just, it's healthy fun. It's substantive. I was challenged and encouraged every time I went. And I just loved what they did. And it was so simplistic. And So that just kind of led me to drawing near. And then I, you know, started to try to invite teammates and trying to invite friends. And then we started a Bible study on the team. And it was just like that. My life was being fueled by a lot of how CGF was pouring into me. And I just wanted to be a part of that environment. And so that was what drew me to College Golf Fellowship was, you know, obviously it was golf. So I related, it was super fun, but just the quality of the men that worked for the organization were, it was amazing. I found that I wanted to be like those men, not necessarily have their accomplishments, but just their character and how they loved people and just the peace that they had. And so I just got near and dear to those guys. And yeah, that just made me naturally drawn to the ministry.
That's so good. And so now, Matt, I mean, you're in a completely different world. You're in the finance world now and dealing with people and families and future and planning and all that stuff. But how, just for those that aren't in ministry full time, how do you navigate that now? Like, how do you steward doing what you're doing, but doing it with a ministry mind to do your job well and to succeed and to work hard at what you're doing, but also to use it for the glory of the Lord and for the, just to show your light to those that you're working with? Like, how do you navigate that going from full-time ministry to now full-time finance, but mending to the two, because that's what we're all called to do as believers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would probably come at it at this angle. I mean, first of all, I've been amazed at how easily transferable that experience was from, you know, getting paid to do ministry to, you know, I don't get paid to do ministry now, but ministry is still there. And so just the spirit of how I care and love on and serve people, it's still the same. It's not like it's a different spirit that I carry into those meetings. I just have other responsibilities now that are different. And so, you know, there's a couple things. I think everybody, I'll say this about my role. I don't know about other different roles out there, but in my role specifically, you know, I'm an advocate for families. I help them with, I give advice to them of just in an area that's near and dear to their family and they need help in navigating things. And so when I look at the way that I can care and love on, it's not just, hey, asking them how they're doing. I mean, it is that, it's caring for their families, it's praying for them, but it's also, man, they have real tangible needs in front of them and things that keep them up at night and helping them think through those things and try. And so I try to bring the integrity with which I give advice and the, you know, the ability to help them navigate certain circumstances. And then also just, you know, I become friends with my clients and, you know, I like my clients for the most part and they like me, I think. And so anyway, I think it just, you realize that in both scenarios, you're in front of somebody who has been made in the image of God and there's just inherent dignity and worth that they have. And so you get to treat them as such. And so if they're hurting, then you hurt with them. If they're rejoicing, you rejoice with them. If they need help, then you help them. If, you know, if they need, you know, if they're, I don't know, if they're in conflict, you get opportunities to help them try to move towards reconciliation. And so there's a lot of just day-to-day things that play out in which you get to show the love and of Christ to people in a very everyday, you know, ordinary thing that everybody deals with when it comes to money. So
it's really good. So Matt, just kind of thinking through that, and thinking about it from a college golfer's perspective, and, you know, they have $10 in their bank account. They're waiting for their next, you know, if they get NIL and you, it's going to be very little, or they're just waiting for their money. They don't have a lot, but how can they steward it well? How can they begin to do things now, even with very little, that will make a huge difference when they have much more, you know, which that's a principle of God's word. But just talk a little bit, give some advice for a college golfer right now to prepare for the future.
Well, so I think I'll give three categories, and one is just the discipline of controlling your spending. I mean, it has only gotten harder as I get older, because I have more mouths to feed and there's just more reasons to go buy stuff. And it's good stuff. It's not, we're not talking like, you know, crazy stuff. We're not talking Lamborghinis over here, right? We're just the discipline and self-control. I mean, we see self-control as a fruit of the spirit, but that has to manifest in everyday life. And so I think when guys get money, just the ability to wisely think through what that money should be spent on and have the self-control to actually implement that. So start that with small, because as you get older, there's only more temptation to buy stuff. That'd be one. Two is the reality of compounding interest. I mean, I wish I had not bought all the pogs that I did in high school. I don't even know if y'all remember that. And put that money into something that was compounding, because I mean, if college guys could start the discipline of saving, they would be amazed at how they would be so glad they did that later. And I didn't. I mean, I spent money on dumb things and stuff. And so that would be the second thing, would just be the reality of compounding interest and time value of money and stuff like that. So basically the short to a takeaway is learn how to save money and put it in investments that you can be in for a long time. Mm. And then probably the third and most important thing is that I'm more convinced than ever that the most important thing that you can do to have a healthy relationship with money is learn to give. And so, you know, just take a simple, what most people think of with tithe and 10%. I mean, we're not here to debate whether that's the right number or not, but if you just use that as a reference, right? If you get $10, find some place to give $1. If you get $100, find some place to give $10. If you get $1,000, find some place to give $100. And I view now giving as very much, it's like a muscle. You've got to learn to flex it. And every year, money is a conversation that comes up almost every day in our household. And every year at the end of the year, when I do my tax return, I think, man, life would be a lot more comfortable if I wasn't giving, right? Because I look at all that money and I think, oh, well, this over here, these areas of stress, they could have been relieved because of this money, but you give it away. And God has commanded us to be generous and to give away our money. But what's amazing is over time, as you give, you start to believe Jesus when he says it's better to give than it is to receive. And it is painful. I told this story last time, but I had an internship 1 year in college and I made $8,000 that summer. And I remember I came back and I was a rookie at this whole giving thing. And I wrote a check. I didn't get a check. I got bills for $800 and I put it in one of those, like, you know, envelopes at the church that you seal it, lick it sealed and put it in the offering plate. Right. And I mean, it was so hard to do, but I now look back and think that those were seeds that were being sown for me to believe that it is better to give than it is to receive. And what happens in life is that you start to realize that you actually receive far more than you give. And so whether you're monetarily wealthy or not, it doesn't really matter. If you just sit back and look at your life, you realize how much of your life that you, it is really because you're the beneficiary of someone else, whether it's your parents, your friends, your coaches giving you time and effort, whatever, but you're given so much and your capacity, when you realize that giving, like what you can give, it actually is very small in regards to what you get. And I mean, obviously that's the story of the gospel, right? We give because God has given to us. I mean, we love because God has first loved us. And so I think that practically money falls into that category where the college guys practice and learn the discipline of giving. I promise you, you know, 20 years from now, if we were to have another conversation after this, you would not regret that money because you will have a healthier relationship with your money.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Thanks, Matt. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Tobes, let's start wrapping it up. You know, give you do some rapid fires.
Hey, we might as well. You know, with you, Matt, you've played a lot of great golf courses. So we'll start with that. Okay. If you could go play any golf course in the world, you just teleport to the first tee. Where are you going to go?
It's so bad. When I feel so much shame to give a stock answer in this deal, but I mean, I've never played Augusta, and I would love to go play Augusta. If we're going to take all of those, like, you know, categories out of those obvious answers out of here, I actually love Boston Golf Club. It's one of my secret favorites out there. I encourage people, if you live near the area or you can get there, go play. It's really unique and just a great spot.
Nice.
All right. Who would you take to play with you? You got the opportunity to go play Augusta. Who else is in that foursome?
You know, I think I would take, well, there's I would kind of give two answers. I mean, I'd love to go with my dad and my Uncle Terry, who I'm real close with. I lost my brother in 2011, and he was born handicapped, so he could never play golf anyway, but he could come and ride around with us or drive around in his wheelchair with us. But that would be that regard. But I think the other angle I'd answer that question at is probably, you know, three of the most important people in my life. Brad Payne, he just continues to just have that place in my life as a guy who has changed my life in just his friendship and mentorship. Drew Allensbach, my best friend, best man at my wedding, and then Martin Piller, who's basically my other best man. That is like my dream group. If I could get those guys, I mean, I think we've actually even done that before, but yeah. The amount of laughter and just encouragement and just goodness that would come out from that day would be awesome. So I'm not impressed with, like, people say, like, professional athletes and stuff, and I'm like, I feel like I did CGF long enough to not be impressed with athletes anymore.
Yeah. You'd still be impressed by Dragon Maiden foursome.
That's fair.
Who was that? Fair. It was John F. Kennedy, Usain Bolt, and current Brad Payne.
Current Brad Payne. Wow. I don't know, man. I'd probably go college Brad Payne because he was so good at golf. He was so good at golf. I don't know. Last time I played with him, he's lost it.
Oh, no.
One of my favorite, just quick, Brad Payne, just golf stories. We're at the Auburn retreat. It's Blaine and Russell Henley. And we've got probably 35 guys there. Like, it's a pretty good retreat. We're playing a 35-some at Auburn University Club. And I don't even remember if it's 1 or 10 because they always change the nines. But all the guys hit, and then Brad still doesn't hit. And everybody's like, Brad, you got to hit. And he hops up there, all 35, and he literally hits the best tee ball of every single guy that had just hit, right down the middle, furthest, dead center of the fairway, and everybody just lost it. That was his first swing in like 6 months, so lots of fun.
Yeah. We used to call Brad Payne the Rolls Royce because you don't bring it out often, but when you do, it's nice.
Oh, it's so good. All right, well, let's finish on that note. Matt Van Zandt, thank you so much for coming on again. I think we were able to, you know, make it through pretty well. Only had a couple little hiccups, and yeah, I was encouraged. I think the listeners will be encouraged. But thank you so much for, number one, your service to the Lord through CGF for, you know, 10 plus years, pouring into us and so many other college golfers, and then now just doing what you're doing. Like you said, it's different, but it's not. You're still just following what the Lord's called you to do. So just encouraged by your brother. Appreciate you, Toby.
Thank you.
Great job as always. And listener, keep listening. We're going to have some more great guests this year. But Matt, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to the Golf Life Faith podcast. Whether you're a college golfer, a coach, or you just love golf, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions, please email us at podcast@collegegolffellowship.com. Also, check us out on Instagram at College Golf Fellowship and on Twitter at CGF Tweet. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and be on the lookout for the next episode next month. Cheers.